Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon.
Welcome to another edition of News and Views. Thanks for joining us. The battle over the controversial anti-LGBT law HB2 moved to the courts this week as Governor Pat McCrory and legislative leaders both filed suits against the federal government. The U.S. Justice Department countersued the state, saying the law discriminates against transgender people in North Carolina. Meanwhile, corporations around the country and in the state are urging state lawmakers to repeal the law that's cost the state millions of dollars in tourism revenue and thousands of jobs. Here to talk about it is Representative Greer Martin from Wake County. Representative Martin, thanks for being back with us on News and Views. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chris. Always good to be here.
So the General Assembly is in session. You guys are back at work. There's a lot of things to talk about, but I guess we should start and spend a good bit of time on the controversy of the day or the year, maybe, House Bill 2. Tell us where we are.
And perhaps even the controversy of the decade that I hope will not go down in the history books as a blot on our state's history. Right now, things stand as they stood when the special, quote-unquote, emergency session was convened to address this, as the proponents said, emergency issue, in that in North Carolina now local governments have lost the ability to pass anti-discrimination ordinances. If you have been discriminated in North Carolina on the basis of your race, your religion, or your gender, you no longer have the right to sue in state court and a whole host of other things also. Now there is a lot of pending potential news out there in that everybody in the entire state has sued everybody else in the state over House Bill 2. The Federal Department of Justice let North Carolina know that House Bill 2 was in fact discriminatory in a way that violated federal law. Governor McCrory and legislative leaders preemptively sued the federal government, the Department of Justice, and at the same time the Federal Department of Justice said, okay, well, we'll go to court then and has sued the state. And the issue is to decide whether or not House Bill 2 is discriminatory.
This entire debate on television lately has been about bathrooms, and I want to talk about that in it maybe in a second, but this law is about much more than that.
This bill is about whatever its proponents, whatever the Republican majority thinks is going to get them more votes in November. Initially, it was about safety, protecting our women and our children. They thought that would get them votes. Then they realized there was absolutely no evidence out there to support that claim. So you see them trying to shift towards making the bill somehow about privacy, when in fact we've all been using the bathrooms with transgender folks without any intrusions on our privacy at all. I mean, when you go to the bathroom, you go about your business, and if you're paying too much attention to who else is in the bathroom with you, you're the one who's got an issue with intruding on others' privacy. So I think the folks of North Carolina will realize, the citizens of North Carolina realize, it's also not about privacy. So what is it about? It's about getting Republicans reelected. It's all about their base. Unfortunately, I don't think their base is all that enthused about this.
I thought one of the most interesting moments of the special session, and it still continues to this day, now 6 or 7 weeks afterwards, was an amendment you offered to make sure the state non-discrimination law protects people on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity. Tell us why you did that and what happened and where we are with that.
Right. So to put that in context, we did not see the bill really until we got on the House, 15 minutes or so after we got on the House floor. And then we're going to be called upon to very quickly consider in committee and just a couple hours later on the floor. A very complicated bill that in the end went far beyond the bathroom issue that we anticipated it would deal with. So from the time we first saw the language till the time Governor McCrory signed into law, it was only 12 hours. So we were scrambling to see what the law did and didn't do and try to address the flaws. One flaw that I saw was that the bill wiped away the ability of local governments to protect their citizens from discrimination for anything. But what the bill did do was create a statewide non-discrimination law that would protect folks on the basis of gender, religion, and race, but did not include protections for gay people from being fired from their job, for example. Interestingly enough, it also swept away some local ordinances protecting folks on the basis of veteran status. Orange County, for example, in its public accommodations ordinance, had a provision that said you couldn't deny a service to someone at a restaurant, for example, because they were a veteran. House Bill 2 swept those protections away. So my amendment would have added to the new statewide anti-discrimination law provisions protecting gay people from being fired from their job because they're gay, for example, but also protecting folks on the basis of veteran status to reinstate the protections that House Bill 2 had swept away. Every Republican except for one voted against my amendment. They voted to table it, and they were too scared to even consider it.
Governor McCrory continues to say that House Bill 2, the law, House Bill 2, I guess to refer to it as that, is similar to the non-discrimination law in most other states, But our law has something different. It has something called biological sex, which is different than a lot of states.
Right. And I think that was intentional because when you talk about transgender folks, they're folks who perhaps have certain anatomical parts that would be associated more with one gender, but they perceive themselves to be, in every other respect, a different gender. So when you throw the term biological sex in there, its clear intent is to allow discrimination against transgender folks, something that not necessarily every other state would do.
What should we do? Should we repeal HB2? Is that the obvious answer?
Yeah, in fact, and Darren Jackson, Susie Hamilton, Greg Meyer, and I introduced a bill, a simple bill in the House a couple weeks ago that would do that. Pure and simple, just wipe the slate clean, go back to where we were before House Bill 2 started. End all this mess, and then we can more deliberately consider what the right path forward for North Carolina is. What we should have done to begin with, take some time, actually ask citizens what they think, ask the job creators in North Carolina what sort of environment they want in North Carolina to bring their employers and what they want, what sort of environment they want to create jobs in, and then move forward. Our bill would do that. I don't think the General Assembly, the Republican General Assembly, is ready to do that yet. So maybe what we ought to do is sit down and figure, okay, we're where we are. My guess is, I'm not going to convince, for example, Skip Stam that my position on the role and the position of transgender and homosexual folks in North Carolina is. And he's certainly not going to convince me. We're both stubborn old coots. One thing I think we can all agree on is that House Bill 2 has done tremendous damage to the economy of our state and has huge potential for that damage to continue. So in recognition of that fact, even if we disagree on the morality of the bill, we got to agree on the economics. That being the case, what action should we take?
What do you think will be possible?
I think there seems to be growing consensus that the terrible provision in House Bill 2 that takes away the ability of North Carolinians who have, for example, been fired because of their religion or their race, they can no longer sue in state court. The governor has called upon the legislature to repeal that provision. I think there's growing support to do that. Why don't we just go and do that today and get that away? That's not going to stop the outrage from the job creators, but we can then proceed to figure out how to address their concerns. They're very much focused on the clear discriminatory provisions against transgender and LGBT North Carolinians. So we're going to have to address that to their satisfaction. That gets a little more complicated, but I think we need to either restore the abilities of North Carolina's municipalities to protect their citizens as they see fit from discrimination, or we need to refine and add to our new statewide non-discrimination law protections on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, and I would certainly advocate for veteran status also.
You mentioned this is hurting North Carolina. What sense do you have of the level of damage this is doing to our state?
Yeah, I think the old tip of the iceberg metaphor is appropriate there. We see the tip of the iceberg. It's very clear. PayPal, Deutsche Bank, so many other companies have said they are either not coming to North Carolina, canceling proposed expansions in North Carolina. The tip of the iceberg is pretty darn big. It's protruding pretty far above the waterline. We know the millions and millions of dollars that has cost the state already. What scares me even more is the rumblings I'm hearing behind the scenes. Folks in business who have talked to companies, corporate recruiters, economic developers, who are hearing off the record from companies, hey, we're not even considering North Carolina because of House Bill 2. That's the really scary thing.
HB 2 certainly has dominated discussion about this legislative session, but there are a lot of other things happening, the House leadership putting a budget together. What are your hopes, one or two key things you'd like to see accomplished this year in addition to addressing the damage done by House Bill 2?
Yeah, a couple of things on the budget. One, from the substance, one from the process. Let's start with the process. I'm worried we're going to rush the budget process. Now, it's the short session. Regardless of who's been in charge, we certainly want to come in and in a prompt fashion get our adjustments to the budget done. But let's remember that we already have a two-year budget in place. In the short session, if we don't pass a budget, the government's not going to shut down, as would be the case in the long session. So we can take the time that we need to do the right thing in our budget adjustments. I am worried that the traditional way we've done the budget in the House is a little bit deliberative, where the individual subcommittees, the Transportation Appropriations Subcommittee, the Justice and Public Safety Subcommittee, will each consider in their subcommittees their portion of the budget. So there's a stop there for the public, our voters, our constituents, to have input into the budget. And then it then goes to the full House Appropriations Committee, usually a day, two, three, four later, where the entire budget is considered in the House. And then a day or two later, it then goes to the House floor. So there's a deliberative process where the public has time to have input, where members have time to do our due diligence and do a crazy thing called read the bill, before we make a decision on it. I am hearing rumblings that that process may be compressed this time. And if that's the case, you then start to worry about what sort of provisions, both budgetary but also special provisions that really don't relate to the budget, get crammed into the budget, hidden in some obscure nook and cranny of the budget where we don't discover it's there until long after it's signed by the governor. Mm-hmm. So I'm concerned about the process. From the substance of the bill, we need to do something significant for teachers, a teacher pay increase that benefits both new teachers but also our experienced teachers who are in there, both benefiting our students with their experience but also mentoring these new teachers that the pay increases could bring in. Beyond that, we need to deliver a permanent pay raise for our state employees. The governor has proposed a one-time bonus. We need to do more than that, a pay increase that continues to benefit them throughout their career to keep them in state government instead of taking their experience into the private sector where they can make more money. In addition, I think we need a cost of living adjustment, a bump for our retired state employees too.
Well, let's hope that that happens in an open process. Thanks for all you're doing, and Raleigh, we appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Chris. Anytime.
Up next, the blockade of President Obama's Supreme Court nominee and a judge from North Carolina. Stay tuned.